Intervju Radija Študent. Bill Morrison na Kino otoku. Bill Morrison, filmski režiser iz New Yorka, je svojo pot začel kot slikar. Že kot slikarja sta ga zanimali predvsem površina in plastičnost platna. Zdaj v svojih filmih pogosto združuje redek arhivski material z vrhunsko sodobno glasbo. Če je pri sliki gledalec neomejen pri času ogledovanja, pa je pri filmu ta čas določen. Morrison je pri filmu odnos gledalca do gledanja obogatil s tem, da je na filmsko platno vnesel dimenzijo časa, ki se je tekom desetletij na sam material otisnil in ga organsko spremenil. Arhivski material, s katerimi dela, so namreč izpred leta 1940. Plastičnost filma je posledica kemijskih in mehanskih procesov na starem posnetku. S to avtentično časovno komponento, ki ne umanka Morrisonov izostren glasbeni čut, pa film zavzame položaj sodobnega umetniškega izdelka. Za svoje delo je bil nedavno nagrajen z retrospektivo v Muzeju moderne umetnosti v New Yorku. Morrison je sodeloval z nekaterimi najsijajnejšimi skladatelji in performerji sedanjega časa. Med njimi so zveneča imena, kot so John Adams, Maya Bizer, Gavin Bryars, Dave Douglas, Richard Einhorn, Eric Friedlander, Philip Glass, Michael Gordon, David Lang, Aleksandra Vrebalov, Julia Wolf in drugi. Z Morrisonom smo se pogovarjali na filmskem festivalu Kino Otok tik po projekciji njegovih štirih znamenitih kratkih filmov Svetloba kliče 2004, Samo starodavne zanke 2012, Onkraj točke nič 2014 in Sanje ladjedelniškega delavca 2016.
We saw four films today. And I'm interested in the process, how do you achieve this texture, like there are at least two layers, if I understood, but is this material that is archive material already damaged, or do you make this impact that we see these different layers?
Yeah, all the visual material and the damage to it is organic. It's been done over time. This is all this, virtually all of the material in the four films we saw today, Light is Calling, Beyond Zero, Just Ancient Loops, and The Dock Worker's Dream, were recorded on nitrate-based film. That's the film from 1949 and before, which was very volatile. Of course, everyone knows that it's very easily combustible. It can engulf in flames, and we've lost a lot of our film collections and some human life because of that. But it also burns in a slower way. It melts and it solidifies. It desiccates. It becomes brittle and dry as the camphor is off-gassed. And what happens is, much as if you were to put a quick drying acrylic paint on top of a slow drying elastic or oil-based paint, you would see cracking or a distortion to the tension. And that's the relationship between the emulsion and the base here, is that they're drying at different, they're interacting with the atmosphere at different rates. And so, as you can see from this program, there are many, many different ways that this can manifest itself. It can stretch the image and model the image. It can obliterate the image. Mm-hmm. These are sort of random occurrences that depend on the condition of the film and the quality of the base and the history of how it was stored. So I look at each film as unique, you know, as a found object. And my process is Well, most of this material came from the Library of Congress in the United States, where I have a very good relationship with the nitrate vault manager. And when he's going to throw something away, he puts it sort of in a limbo on a shelf with my name on it. And from time to time, I come maybe once or twice a year to see what he's found, to see what he wants to throw away. And if I say, no, I don't want it, then poof, it's thrown away. So there's a certain amount of responsibility that comes with it.
So it would be lost for humanity if you wouldn't put it in your...
Well, sometimes it's... I don't know if it will be lost. That particular print would be. A lot of times he's throwing away a print that's redundant. In other words, they have a pristine copy already. They don't need this archive. The only person to be interested in this would be Bill Morrison.
So in this film with some images from the First World War, Beyond Zero.
Yes.
There are airplanes in the air.
Yeah.
And at some point, I got this association because the image changed and it looked as somebody would put a water with a brush on it.
Yeah. So this is a fairly standard practice in early film films were hand painted. And this would be done by a team of artisans, usually women, who were very good with details. Mm-hmm. They were also the editors, but, you know, embroidery.
Precise
and calm, you know. Mm-hmm. There were many different ways of doing it. There were stencils, but also each frame was painted frame by frame. And you also saw that in the sequence in Just Ancient Loops with... with Christ, all the robes were painted, and as it happens, that hand painting also can be a catalyst for more decay, because again, that's another layer that's drying at a different rate than the film, and so that oftentimes with hand painted or dyed films, you'll see an interaction that that interacts with the nitrate and becomes a decay. So I'm oftentimes looking for films like those as well.
Oh, so that was hand painted when you got the film, or earlier?
Much earlier. So I didn't, for the most part, I don't alter the image.
Not at all.
I slow it down. I think it's important to understand here that what we're seeing is, and I did make an announcement before the screening, that what we're seeing is organic, natural decay that has withstood many, many decades. And so it's sort of the winds of change that have made these films appear the way they do. And this is how they are contemporary films, not because of something that I've done to it, but because of the aging process. It has taken exactly this long for these films to look this way.
And even the color in the Just Ancient Loops is organic, so the blue color?
This is probably a dye. So they've dyed, that's right. So the colors are added, but they were added when
earlier.
The film was released, yeah.
Ah, all right. Yeah. Uh-huh. Interesting. So earlier you were talking a little bit about Just Ancient Loops, the process of searching for divinity.
Yeah.
Could you tell us a bit more about this idea behind the film, since it's quite abstract?
I guess it could... It's in three parts. The jumping off point for the film was to find a visual counterpoint to the composer's method of working with just intonation, and that being the scales that haven't been precisely metered as they are in a Baroque scale, where everything an octave is exactly eight notes above. The just intonation, or the music of the ancients, scales are to us seemingly more random, though they are follow prime numbers and prime whole numbers. And that reminded me of a lecture that I heard by the great sound editor Walter Murch, who discussed the how there are certain ratios between bodies that orbit around larger bodies.
In space,
but also in atoms, you know, with electrons and...
The microspace.
Yeah, and also in the microspace, that any, and probably in our space too, that any naturally occurring orbit where around moons, around planets, the orbiting satellite tends to follow in the same troughs, in the same ratio between the body and the other orbiting bodies.
These orbits and the moons around Jupiter, how are they connected with music?
Oh, so these ratios are whole numbers that that form scales, if you will. You know, they are the prime whole numbers of the universe, and from which you can. It's not such a jump to imagine that just intonation also is following these whole numbers. So that got me into a course of looking for an absolute, looking for a divinity, looking for heaven, and from that we introduced the telescope from the Vatican Observatory, and then the ancient footage of looking at the stars and solar eclipses, and sort of this shocking idea of an ancient image following the looking into the future. You know, sort of this counterpoint that an image of Saturn, as we think of that, we only have recently acquired the technology to look at Saturn, could also be modeled and damaged like an ancient text. In contrast to that, I introduced this CGI, computer-generated imagery, that follows the orbits of the four Jovian moons, the Galilean moons that circle around Jupiter, and their ratio, because they are very clean examples of these troughs that that orbiting bodies follow in. And from there, the last part is a sort of a biblical telling of mankind from creation to Jesus, I guess, as told through ancient cinema.
So, I really liked the cello music, and there were also different instruments, I think, apart from cello in other movies, right?
But it's certainly. Well, in Just Ancient Loops, it was one cellist, though she had 18 different tracks that she was playing on all 18 tracks that she was playing with herself.
Are you saying that there are like layers of music?
On Just Ancient Loops, yeah. And all of them.
At one time,
it's multi-channel. When she plays it live, she plays one track and the rest of it's pre-recorded. With the first film, Light is Calling, that's a string quartet plus another violinist who is the soloist. And then there's some electronics, you know.
The last one is very different, the Dock Worker's Dream.
Yeah, this is more like a techno or disco music created by the band Lamb Chop. This was a chance to work with Lamb Chop to make sort of a long-form music video.
Mm-hmm. So it's original composed for the movie?
Yeah, it is, in fact. In this case, it's kind of a mix, because I cut the film first, and then Kurt gave me a track that Ryan Norris, who's in his band, had created this beat, you know. And then I recut the film with those breaks, and then Kurt added his vocals. So it kind of went back and forth.
Okay, last kind of question. I'm interested how your working process works, because this is quite amazing to see this abstract work on the screen. So I was wondering, how do you, so like you probably get an idea, and then, for example, the first three movies, did you first think about the music and then how the music goes with the idea, then you find the image, or first you find the image in the museum that you were mentioning?
Yeah. I'm looking for images all the time, and I know where they're hidden, and I know that there's ones out there that I've saved that I haven't used, and I'm waiting for an opportunity to use them. Sometimes the music is an opportunity to use an image I know about, you know. So with the just going through them, with Light is Calling, this Nitrate Vault manager who I was telling you about, his name is George Williman, and at the time he worked in the Library of Congress when it was located in Ohio. He had seen Decasia, and he said, oh, I found this beautiful example of this film that, again, it's redundant. There's a pristine copy. I'm going to throw it out. Come look at it. So I did, and I ended up making two films out of that print, The Mesmerist, which sort of retells the story in a different light, and then Light is Calling, which is just these two secondary characters meeting on the road. I was already working with this material when my friend Michael Gordon, who wrote the music for Decasia, said, look, I have this new record. If you like any of these tracks, please consider making a film for it. And it was very easy to put the Light is Calling track to that imagery. It worked perfectly, you know. So that was one of the easiest films I ever made. With Just Ancient Loops, it was a case of I was asked to make a film that would support the performance of that piece, which is a 26-minute piece, for Maya Beiser's performance. And in turn, I would get the master recording as to use as part of the film. So it was a mutually beneficial thing, but ultimately I was cutting to that music. With Beyond Zero, the composer, Aleksandar Vrabelov, a wonderful Serbian composer living in New York, and I were commissioned by Kronos Quartet to create a piece for them to play. So we started at the same point. And she's the only composer who's ever come to the archive with me to draw inspiration, and she actually got some of her audio files from that same archive that she used in the piece and also recorded me while I was editing, so that the clicking that you hear on the track of a film going through a projector is actually me viewing some of these same films. And ultimately, again, she finished the piece, and then Kronos Quartet recorded it so that I could edit to it, and then eventually they did a second recording for mastering. And I think I explained Doc Worker's Dream with it.
Thank you very much. Okay. I would love to talk more with you, but
we're out of time.
Thank you so much.
Z Billom Morrisonom se je pogovarjala Simona Jerala. Intervju Radija Študent.